KUJZ is 95.3 The Score. And now,
check this out.
It's crunch time with Steve Tannen.
They think he's a righteous dude.
When I win.
Live from the Papa John's studio.
Wait a minute. Let me get CP on the line. We're green lighting it. It's a go.
And I want full air support. I want tanks and some fire throwers. And I want explosions over here. And I want planes going. Cool.
Are they going to bust in here and arrest us?
It's crunch time on 95.3 The Score.
Here they are, one strike away, one out away. 3-2. Yeah! Here it is! The Washington Nationals are world champions for the first time in franchise history.
And a World Series Game 7 winning Curly W is in the books. The celebration is on. The Washington Nationals are the world champions.
Yeah, a little melding from the TV call, Joe Buck's Fox TV, to Charlie Slew's Nats Radio 106.7, the fan in our nation's capital. All hail. I would like to welcome you to the All Hallowed Eve edition of Crunch Time and Sports Talk right here on 95.3 The Score. By the way, I should announce that from 4 to 6, they're putting it together. I even see balloons out there. It is balloon! Kendall Toyota, 95.3 The Score. It's our annual trunk or treat. And in just about an hour, they'll be in the parking lot behind Valley River Center. Whole bunch of new cars, courtesy of Kendall. Trunks full of candy for the kiddies and the parents. So join them, 4 to 6 today. And then I actually think at Valley River, they start allowing trick-or-treaters inside. My neighborhood, I live, if you head down Highway 99 at past Four Corners over the overpass from downtown, and you get to that first Dairy Mart there, the neighborhood on the left. And most of the houses were born. They gave birth to houses back then. It was so long ago.
Strong start to painful. The show, Steve, for both of us.
It was painful. But, the late 40s, early 50s, very post-World War II. So, loved the neighborhood, very blue-collar. And we've had years where we've given out maybe two bags of candy. And another year where we've given out eight. So the tradition has been, you can tell how our trick-or-treating was by how much candy I bring in on the first. So get out, enjoy it. We've got a lot scheduled. Scott Felix, who hosts a podcast regarding USC called The Players Lounge on the Believe Network, will join us at 3:30. We'll have a lightning round. Aaron Fentress of The Athletic at 4:30. We'll be talking trash. We'll be talking about the World Series. Action starts tonight on the football gridiron. The Blazers with a win last night. I'm going to mock the Embiid Karl Anthony Towns fight as being... Oh, I'm sorry. We should have forgotten about it already forever. So, should you desire to participate in our daily festivities Monday through Friday, 3 to 6 here on 95.3 The Score, well, you can call us 284-8571. It's the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Try us on the text line 321-0824 on Twitter at 953 The Score. That is our radio station for at Sports Talk 953. That is our radio program and yours truly. For JT Miller, our producer wearing a Rangers jersey for Halloween with a Giants hat.
I'm confused sports fan. I have four different team
four.
Items
well,
on.
You have a t-shirt on underneath representing who?
The Blazers.
The Blazers. And you got Atlanta Falcons socks?
Yes.
That's a quartet
right
there.
I'm a confused sports fan, man.
And you got all four sports repped, so well done there.
Yeah, thank you.
By the way, I've threatened this for years and years and years, but one of our salespeople, Jen, has given me Oregon Spirit straight American bourbon whiskey. So go easy on me, or I'm breaking every corporate rule in the book.
Like to be officially on record and say, don't do that, Steve. That is a bad idea.
Secretly, you're like, boy, is that a good idea. All right, let's get to the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline and bring in Steven. Steven, good afternoon. How are things with you?
Hi, Steve Tannen, Team USA Fan Council. I want to say happy Halloween. And what is your prediction on the scrimmage tonight for the Oregon Ducks?
Our prediction on the scrimmage. Did they play last night? I'm a little confused. The green versus yellow. So I'll give you a prediction that when Oregon scrimmages, the Ducks will win. Load on it. So last night, first of all, again, I caught some of that special on ESPN College Football 150. Ivan Mizell has put it together. And, oh my God, it's just one after another. It's all so good. And they were talking about legendary helmets. I think I only caught about 10 minutes because I was doing every once in a while I do kind of a zany cross training thing where I'll do 12 minutes on the elliptical, then I'll do 12 minutes on my stationary bike. So by the time I put the thing on, it came out of commercial, it was only 10 minutes. I think it was actually legendary uniforms, but I was captivated by how many people for years were confused by what you saw on the Ohio State helmets. One guy was like from the 70s, he and his friends were like, are they really sticking marijuana leaves on their helmets? And I think it was a guy from one of the major news outlets. And the parents were like, no, they're Buckeyes. And ESPN did a great promo about that in the 90s where they got the guy. In some ways, I think it was an assistant or like the trainer or the equipment guy. It wasn't like Cooper or the coaches. And he's like, make a good tackle on special teams, Buckeye. Make a key tackle, Buckeye. Make an important first down, Buckeye. So it just, it was really clever, really well done. And they started getting into, what do you go up to the guy and it's like, dude, you played all year. You got three stickers on your helmet. What the hell is wrong with you? They were talking about the Michigan Wings and, that's about as recognizable a helmet as there is. And when Bo Schembechler, who, the Hall of Fame coach, took the gig, and he was actually an Ohio guy, he wanted to change it. And I forgot who it was. One of the administrators at the time said that might have been the shortest conversation anybody ever had with Schembechler. They talked about, check this out, the Notre Dame gold helmets. So what they do is, first of all, there was a conversation several years ago, I think it might involve sanctions Holtz, about putting ND on the helmet. And that ended quickly because they said it's supposed to represent, and if you look at the actual golden dome, so what happens is when they repaint that, they scrape the gold paint off, and they take the chips and they mix it in with the paint, and then they paint the helmets. And I was like, that's pretty deep. And even though I don't like Notre Dame, that's really cool. And, of course, then you get schools like Oregon, which have no color identity. They kind of invented all of this insanity. So is the Michigan helmet the one that pops the most? Because if it's Alabama, if it's Penn State, you know, which look like high school helmets but have that unique identity unto itself, and I'm saying with Michigan, it's like Michigan. The other one might be half a beat, Ohio State, Alabama, Penn State, you kind of got it.
Even Ohio State's is just like a shiny high school helmet that right. They're like, everybody else has just kind of got a helmet, and I don't know what kind of logo we want to put on there. So stickers, that'll make it different. The iconic helmets, it's got to be Notre Dame at the top just because It's gold.
It's like gold. They're literally, it's also probably the only helmet that's part of the school's identity, the nickname. One of their nicknames is not just the Fighting Irish, it's the Golden Domers.
Right. It's not just, as well as it not just being painted like, it's like a, you know, it's like a yellowish thing. I don't know. We couldn't find the right Pantone one day and we just kind of gave up. So it's as close as gold we can get. No, there's like gold, like it's gold. And it's not paint. It's weird because you'll see, I always think it's really funny when like, you look at an offensive lineman at the end of a game, and they've just been battling it out, and they're grueling or whatever. But you can see, like, the chips.
I love that. Better them than me.
Right, exactly. But like, and it'll happen, too, with other helmets, too. If a team's wearing a white helmet, and they're playing, like, any other team that has a color on, but you start seeing the transfer of the colors ending up on the other helmets, it's just the opposite, where you're seeing, literally, the paint is chipping away, and you're like, oh, that's exactly what that model helmet looks like when it's stripped down to the bone.
Yeah, you know it's been a knockdown dragout when the helmet looks like an artist's practice easel where it's just rubbed different colors off on it. Somebody just texted in one, which I think absolutely, the Longhorn of UT. And I don't think they deviate. Maybe colors, but there's always the actual Longhorn there.
Now,
Penn State...
I don't know. Penn State's just a white helmet. Like, a lot of teams have white helmets. Their thing is that, like, they've been wearing the same uniform since, like, the day Joe Pa birthed Penn State University out, like, you know, 900 years ago. He's just like, we're going to wear white and blue, and our fans are going to wear white to the games. That's all we do. That's all we'll ever do. Now, are we getting confused with what a helmet looks like in an iconic logo?
Because no, just the helmet.
Okay. Because I don't know. Man, it's tough for me to try and think of, like, when I see...
The Florida Gator?
Yeah.
Kind of pops.
I'm still thinking, like, logo. Like, that is... It's the logo that you're thinking of on the helmet rather than the rest of the helmet.
If they were better, would you instantly recognize the Hawkeye of Iowa? Or does it take you a second? Could it be the Kansas State Wildcat? The Hog of the Razorbacks? By the way, I'm, like, literally cheating now. I'm just going through the standings. How about Cal? I mean, it literally spells it out. Do they ever wear a different uniform? A helmet? I don't think so.
USC's is up there as well.
That's
always been the red with the yellow Trojan on the other side.
I'm going to put that up. So it's like, we don't necessarily need to go Mount Rushmore. It's just like, there's just a list where every college football fan's like, I got that one, I got that one. And if you have to think a half second, it's like, then that's not on the list.
UCLA as well. Well, there's that weird period with like Adidas and Under Armour where they tried like navy blue helmets, and I don't know if that really...
But does it always say UCLA? It never says Bruins on it.
Yeah, it never says Bruins, and there's never a bear. So there's always the script UCLA on it. The color of the helmet changes from like a weird gold.
By the way, please put a bear.
I don't know. The Bruins tried that with their jerseys in like the early 2000s. They're like, hey, we're the Bruins. We've got this bear patch on our shoulder. Let's put a big bear on the front. And it's one of the worst, funniest looking bears and jerseys ever.
What about, there's also Clemson that just has the big tiger paw orange. Somebody, you know, you see the Tar Heel of North Carolina. Oh, I guess Florida State never deviates from the actual picture of the Seminole, does it?
No, their helmets are the spear tip or whatever, but the only thing they've changed is whether or not the spears like overlap on the back of the helmet or whatever. It's just a lot of like really weird tiny details.
I gotta tell you, when push comes to shove, I still think the easiest, the most recognizable one, because some that we've mentioned may not have had the, you know, 70 years of tradition, I think I'm still leaning Michigan. Somebody said, did Oregon ever have the duck on the helmet? I know they've had it on the uniform. They've had the interlocking U and O. Well, first of all, it doesn't matter because Oregon's had more than one, thus they're eliminated. And they've had like 17 this year, so they're not even... somebody texted Nebraska, simple, but... I think the minute that pops up on your screen, you know who's playing. So good input there. 284-8571, the Oregon fuel injection hotline. And here's the stunning development. What the hell was I going to talk about before I got sidetracked onto football helmets? Well, at least this is a unique sidetrack. I was actually talking about sports and college football during college football season, which who's kidding who? That doesn't happen that often. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. I wanted to talk about last night because while I get A.J. Hinch, so the Astros lose, and it happened. So I actually got one right during Crunch Exchange. I said that the Nats were going to finish it. It's going to go 0-7. So there were more than a quarter of a million people who paid for World Series tickets that all of them went home upset. None more than the Houston fans who actually went to games 6 and 7, led with a chance to wrap up a second World Series, and all had to go home. And Houston's a top 10 market, so that's miserable traffic, which adds to it. So, thoughts on that, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. What I wanted to get to is, for those that are giving heat to A.J. Hinch over not using Gerrit Cole, and I understand, what do you save him for? Game 8? But I got to tell you the truth. Running out a starter to start on less than normal days rest is not usually a successful recipe. And we know that there have been some who've done well under those circumstances. It's not a long list. It's not a 50%. You're generally asking for problems. So, in the case of Gerrit Cole, the question is, when was the last time he came into a baseball game in relief? So he's made 202 appearances as a major leaguer with the irate Pirates and now the Astros. 192 regular season starts, 10 postseason starts. How many times has he come out of the bullpen? None. Okay, he was at UCLA as a high-level recruit. How many times was he used out of the bullpen? A none. The last time he came in relief, he was pitching at Orange Lutheran High School well over a decade ago. Look, they lost the game, and forever you're going to see that look on Harris's face for getting tagged with the loss and the blown save, and for eternity being seen surrendering the fail pole oppo dinger to Howie Kendrick. But the dude had a 1.5 ERA this year over 68 bullpen appearances. He's the relief guy in that situation, and he had thrown nothing but blanks all playoffs until these last two games.
But what's the point of having Cole go out to the bullpen, get warmed up, be in uniform, and do all of that only for him to be just like a potential threat? Like, hey, Nationals, we might pull out a Gerrit Cole on you. Like, that doesn't work.
I think it was if Harris kept the lead.
Maybe. I mean, but why not? Like, you have the lead when you could have gone to him right out of the pen. And you can't even complain that it's a lefty-lefty matchup because the Astros don't even have any lefties to go with. There doesn't seem to be any point if A.J. Hinch is hearing all this information and maybe Cole was just like, I don't know if I'd be all that great out of the pen. I've literally never done it before. Like, I'm not ready for this. Don't put me out there unless you're going
to
use me.
What about if he wanted him to start an inning? Like a starter,
maybe
if they kept the lead.
But
I'm just saying that there are too many people that are definitive on him when Will Harris was untouchable for most of the postseason, and he's a reliever, and he's in his comfort zone. So
it doesn't make sense to me that you would put him out there to just be like, okay, you're going to be out there, but only in one specific situation at one specific time. And then if that doesn't happen, we're not going to use you at all. Like, if you're going to fall behind when you give up the homer to Kendrick, put him back in at the top of the next inning to get back so that the lead can be shut down, so he can face a couple batters, and then you can let the bullpen rest and readjust and change your game plan. Because once you started to go to Osuna and Devinsky and everybody else after that, like, it just fell apart. It didn't seem like...
I loved Osuna giving up a run, by the way. That was awesome.
Yeah, you don't hate to see it, you know.
The bottom line is, I will not defend Hinch because they lost. But, you know, they lost four games at home. The reason they lost the series wasn't because he didn't put Cole in last night in the seventh or eighth inning. But... That's a brutal pill to swallow. And would it be awesome if somehow we could find out where Taubman lived and just everybody get like some kind of recording of his, thank God we got Osuna, and just mail, just inundate his actual mailbox with pictures of that and MP3s of that and just bust his balls until his head falls off. Idiot. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. And how about the karmic irony? So who got the last out of the World Series? Daniel Hudson. Who gave up a big run in the World Series? Osuna. Remember when Daniel Hudson was taking heat from a couple of idiots because he was going to miss time in the postseason for being there for the birth of his child? And how'd that turn out? Let's say I was taking a survey and you had to chime in. How'd that turn out? All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Before we take a break and get ready for our first guest, who will join us from the Believe Podcast Network, who does the Players Lounge podcast, Scott Felix, I want to remind you since, tomorrow's another edition of Friday Duck Talk at the IHOP at Gateway, brought to you by Bi-Mart. And my special guest, if you flash back to a big performer from the 94 Rose Bowl team, you will eventually get to Dino Filial, number 12, the running back, who will join us. Look forward to that. And we'll run down the big comeback against Washington State. Look forward to USC. And we roll from the IHOP at Gateway from 8 to 9. And if you can't make it down, then have some free duck pancakes. We'll be broadcasting on our brother station, 96.1 KZL. So remember, if you can make it down to Friday Duck Talk brought to you by Bi-Mart, I'm your host, and we'll be on 96.1 KZL. And of course, tune into every Oregon Duck football game right here. KJZ 95.3, the score. All right, that brings us to break time. We'll do that. We'll come back. We'll have an update. Like I said, we'll talk some Trojans Ducks with Scott Felix coming at you next. 95.3, the score.
Crunch time on 95.3, the score is brought to you by Guarantee RV Supercenters. Family owned and operated for more than 50 years. Visit them online at guarantee.com.
And it's a running play. Give it to Verdell. Huge hole, and he's off to the races. And this may not even be a race. 50, 40, not going to get him. 20, 10, put six up on the board. 89 yards. C.J. Verdell just showed us some speed. And Oregon's offensive line showed him a huge hole.
Well, that's the key right there, Jerry.
Yeah, if you watch that play again, the ever-observant producer of this program, Nick Rogers, gave me kind of the elbow and pointed at the bottom of your screen, I believe it was, Juwan Johnson. By the way, I've noticed in my shorthand when I take notes that only I understand, normally over the past couple years when I talk about Johnny Johnson, I do JJ, but Juwan Johnson is JJ, so now I got JJ3 and JJ6. So watch Juwan Johnson take out two defenders. Kind of, in essence, he'll end up to Verdell's right, but the stick-to-itiveness, and first I think it's Sewell that fires out to the left side off of his left tackle position. I mean, the execution and the willingness to engage defenders is just, it's in essence, it's Scott Frost's no block, no rock. To a T. Just a brilliant execution and obviously the way the play turned out. Well, if you get an 89-yard touchdown, I don't recall a team going back to the drawing board and say, well, we're going to have to, y'all, son, y'all going to have to do better than that. All right, welcome you back to Crunch Time. 95-3 the score. It is the Halloween edition of the big program. Feel free to hit us up on the text line, 321-0824. But right now, time to get another angle on this Big Duck Trojan matchup. Our next guest is the host of the Players Lounge podcast, another repping all the great stuff you'll find with our friends at Believe. You can follow along on Twitter. Use the handle at ScottStarFelix. Scott Felix checks in. Scott, how's life treating you these days?
Dude, it is pretty good when you're the first guy that introduces the Players Lounge with some juice like that. I appreciate you.
All right. Well, we've had a lot of you on, and it's you've hit a lot of homers, so the pressure's on, man.
Hey, let's do it, man. Let's do it.
All right. So as a first-time guest, I'm always curious, a little background, where do you hail from? Maybe what were some of your sports loyalties growing up?
I am from a place called the Inland Empire in Southern California. It's like in between Corona and San Bernardino. It's like one great area, kind of like how Los Angeles is. I mean, shoot, sports teams growing up. I'm a diehard Lakers fan to this day. Funnily enough, I was an Eagles fan when I grew up. I was like the first team that I actually saw play football, like Donovan McNabb, Terrell Owens. And, yeah, I mean, that was like my squad. But then once I started getting recruited to college and everything, I kind of like dropped the whole NFL thing and then just don't really have a special team now. Just root for my buddies now.
Right. So where did you end up doing your undergrad, and what led to you hosting this podcast?
I did theater. I did that with the emphasis on acting at USC, and which, they, you know, they have a great drama program.
Sure.
And, yeah, it was hilarious because, you know, I was in theater as a kid and then kind of drifted away from it when I started playing football in high school. And then once I had that opportunity to get back into it in college, I mean, I jumped right on it. But, you know, in terms of the Players Lounge, you know, I met with a guy named Braun who owns the Believe Podcast Network. And, you know, he was talking about getting a USC football podcast. And well, he asked me if I'd want to host it, and I was like, no, not really. you know, just to be honest, I was like, I don't want to be the USC football guy, to be honest. But I told him I would be interested in having a podcast that focused on players coming on there and having an open-ended conversation and just talking about anything that we wanted to.
Well, obviously you could change your mind, so flexibility is a strength you must have learned from the USC School of Dramatic Arts.
Yes, sir.
You know, I always feel like you can't talk SC football without asking about the status of Clay Helton. I mean, awful losing season, which, as I don't have to tell you, is almost unfathomable. Yep. And even though via tiebreaker they do lead the South, they've got three losses. I don't know if you're a betting man, but if they slipped up down the stretch, you think how much trouble you think he'd be in?
Could you define the term flipped up? Is that a good or a bad thing?
They end up losing like two out of their next four out of the South picture in a third-tier bowl.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's you can pretty much you know what will happen at that point. You know, I would imagine that we'll probably drop one game that we're not supposed to, you know. For some reason, we love to play up against big teams like, you know, Oregon and Utah. Notre Dame even, but when it comes to playing teams that we should be dominating, you know, they play to that same level, and it's frustrating at times because it's really hard to gauge, you know, a pick, you know, or a prediction. I have no idea what I'm going to get this weekend.
Talking with Scott Felix of the Players Lounge podcast, let's move to the quarterback position because after a full season under his belt, you expected big things for JT Daniels before he got lost for the year. Then it's Keaton Slovis, the true freshman. So, you know, just from winning the backup job over more experienced players to what we've seen in recent weeks, how impressed are you with this young guy stepping into this situation?
I'm really impressed, man. I think that anytime you get thrusted into a position like that, you know, the way that he answered, you got to be impressed, especially as being a true freshman. So, you know, the good thing is that he has a lot of weapons around him and receivers. Our running backs are really talented, and I think if this is the best our O-line has been since the year that we won the Rose Bowl. I think that he's done a great job, you know, but with that being said, there are a lot of there's a lot of room for him to improve. And, you know, I think that he's been doing that slowly each week. But at the same time, though, I would like to see him take that next level in this next game.
I thought his performance in the clutch last week was huge. But being someone born in 1960, it always takes me a moment to realize, wow, USC is doing the air raid, because, you know, I'm from the days of student body left. But that running back situation, which you kind of touched on briefly, Stephen Carr, Marquise Strepp, what's their health status, and who else maybe should fans up here look for running the ball for USC?
Yeah, I believe at this point, I'm not too certain, but last time I checked, I thought they were questionable. Honestly, either way, if you have either one of those guys in, or if you have the freshman that we were playing this last game, I apologize for not knowing his name, number 23, but he's got some gas, and not in a bad way, in a good way. he's electric, man. So, you know, I think that if USC, they know which running back they're going to have, and, you know, they see that they cater to the talent of the whichever running back is in. And last week we saw them switch up the scheme a little bit.
Yeah, Keenan Kristen is the guy who's
Thank you.
I got to look at him. He's serious.
Oh,
by the way, I almost forgot. I mean, I mentioned you're the host of the Players Lounge podcast. So for folks who want to keep up and be in a college town, you know, we've got our fair share of SoCal people and USC fans. Well, where could folks find it?
It's on the Believe Podcast Network. Obviously, we are called the Players Lounge. If you want to say it with some flavor, as you did, I encourage it, saying the Players Lounge. our Twitter page is at the Players Lounge Believe. So, yeah, if you want to find us, I would go on the website at believe.com, and you'll be able to get some good stuff on there.
You know, another thing you hit on, this monster tradition of elite receivers, I mean, whether it's from Keyshawn or Marquise Lee, you know, the current NFL crop, Juju and Nelson Agholor, and now this group of targets, I mean, watching them week in, week out like you do, what could you tell us about the capability of the, I'm going to call him the Elder Pittman, Munro, St. Brown, Tyler Vaughns, because those guys just look like a handful.
Yeah, they are extremely talented. You know, every single year since I've been at USC, every year we've had a guy that was amazing, whether it was Robert Woods when I first came there, and then Marquise Lee came out, you know, Nelson, and then Juju. There's always been one guy that's been amazing, and every other guy has been really solid. But with these three guys, they're all equally amazing. You know, you can make a legitimate argument for each player being the best receiver on the team, and I wouldn't argue with you with either one. But, you know, each week they're progressing, and initially going into the season, I kept hearing so much hype about them, saying how this might be the greatest receiving core USC's ever had. And I was just like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Just like, pump the brakes, man. I want to see these guys actually play before I actually say that, because that's a lot to say compared to, you know, recent receivers in the past. So, but I think they've made me eat my words. And I've been really impressed watching them this entire season.
A couple final thoughts for Scott Felix of the Players Lounge podcast. We know that Oregon has been a dominant running team for a lot of years. Last couple years, though, a little bit of slippage, but from what you've observed in this Clancy Pendergast defense, how would you evaluate the Trojan run defense so far here in 2019?
I would say that there's some games where it's hit and miss, man. But at the same time, though, I would say that has been – it's weird. It's hard to say. There's been a lot of really consistent moments and consistent runs in games, but then there will be a long run every once in a while. And, you know, I know that comes with run fits and just playing in the front seven, but I would say that's hands down the strength of our defense. It's a better D-line than we've had in quite some time. I think that they play really well when they're playing power football, because they're very thick, they're very big, very strong. But an area that you see them lose a little bit of their assignments is when they start stretching the field and they start running a lot of zones.
My favorite rap question when we speak with a representative from the other side is, you know, we follow Oregon. Most of what we see and hear comes through what I call the yellow and green lens. You follow USC closely. You hear what the players have to say, the coaches have to say. So what's kind of the buzz about the caliber of this Oregon team they're going to face and some of the challenges Oregon's bringing down to Troy?
I think that, you know, the Oregon's got a lot of juice this year, man. I've watched them a few games, and they're entertaining to watch. I like the way that they play. I feel that watching a lot of – I haven't watched too many Pac-12 games just because it's been pretty frustrating to watch. But the ones that I have seen, it feels like I'm watching a JV football compared to other places in the conference. The speed of the game is immensely slower, but when I watch Oregon, though – they're playing at the same speed as Oklahoma or, you know, in Alabama. And not that I'm saying that. I don't know if y'all can beat Alabama. I don't know about that. But, you know, I'm looking at that. I'm like, that is hands down right now the most competitive team in the conference. And you know, I'm really excited to see how they match up with you guys this weekend because it's going to, again, I have no idea what the hell's going to happen. But your Oregon is legit this year. You can see it as soon as you watch any kind of film on them. I think that they play hungry, which is, you know, one of the best compliments you can give a team. And, you know, I really like them this year. They're doing a really good job.
By the way, if we knew what was going to happen, I'd be having this conversation at my mansion in Vegas, not a studio in Eugene.
Hell yeah, I'd be with you right now. Doing a little cheers to that.
All right, folks, he's Scott Felix. He's the host of the Players Lounge podcast on the Believe Network. You could follow along on Twitter. Use the handle at @ScottStarFelix. Hey, great having a chance to talk with you. Enjoy the weekend, and I hope we can chat again down the road, Scott. Thanks for joining us, man.
Of course, man. Thank you for having me on the show.
All right, take it easy. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. By the way, there is a story that is breaking now from the Washington Post. I got you. We were talking about Trent Williams, the offensive lineman for Washington, who was holding out all this year until the day of the trade deadline. He has revealed that he had cancer. And apparently, he has no trust for the franchise, he's now saying they failed to take seriously a growth on his head for 6 years. This is, like you said, this is a story that broke within the last 75 minutes. So that is a brutal condemnation, especially if it turns out to be spot on accurate. It's like, are you kidding me? All right, that brings us to break time. So you know what we're going to do on this Halloween 2019?
Time break.
Take a break. We'll be back. Oh, the lightning round pending next. 95.3 The Score.
I was looking in the lab.
Crunch Time on 95.3 The Score is brought to you by Guarantee RV Supercenters. Family owned and operated for more than 50 years. Visit them online at Guarantee.com.
To my surprise.
Walls and a strike. Outside target, Chirinos the pitch. Swing a line drive, slice down the right field line toward the corner. Springer back, looking up, and this one is gone. It hits the foul pole, and the Nationals lead. Howie Kendrick has done it again. A slicing two-run homer off the right field foul pole. Do you believe it, Howie Kendrick? Part two.
I love that. Howie Kendrick, part two. His name's Charlie Slows. He's the Nationals radio play-by-play man. That's 106.7 The Fan in D.C. As we welcome you back to the, obviously, Halloween edition of Crunch Time and Sports Talk on this Thursday. In a stunning development, Halloween equals the final day of October. Like how I figured that out all by myself.
Every year, too.
Like clockwork. I have a couple of my good friends who are born on Halloween, which, that was fun. I also had a cousin who was born on Christmas. That's annoying. Our son was born on July 4th. That also, sometimes, it's like, we got the day off if it's in the middle of the week, then we got to do the birthday, and are we going to host people for July 4th? Are we going out? And it's, oh my God, it's Kale's birthday. It's like, stop! No more Christmas births. No more July 4th births. Just be born on a regular day. All right. So with that thought in mind, anyway, let's lock up the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. I usually don't prepare something, but I've got a little something prepared here. So with that thought in mind, the way we wrap up the lightning round on every Thursday at the end of crunch time is with this.
You'll have to excuse my friend. He's a little slow.
Luckily, I have prepared for such an event. The lightning round!
So it's the lightning round as Halloween's come around. All the home teams went down. The leaves are all turning brown. Can the Ducks win again out of town? Embiid hates Carl Anthony Towns. My favorite candy is Mounds. The lightning round.
So creatively, that's your best one because you actually thought about it. The execution wasn't great because you were ahead of tempo.
I know, it was.
You were off tempo.
I knew I was screwed. I just had to lean on the lyrics.
You had too many words and okay. You know, all around though, that's an A. A for, literally A for effort. The Washington Nationals are World Series champions, and this is incredible for so many reasons, one of which is that the Nats had not won a playoff series and got eliminated in a series of Game 5 embarrassments year after year after year. Then Anthony Rendon, Juan Soto, Steven Strasburg, Trey Turner, Max Scherzer, and hell, even Howie Kendrick said bleep you to that sad history and won themselves a World Series. And while that's all fun and good, one of the bigger storylines are the moves that manager A.J. Hinch didn't make. In Game 7, with near 5 months to recover from throwing more pinches, Hinch had Gerrit Cole warming up in the bullpen, ready to replace starter Zach Greinke, who was still very much in control of the game despite giving up a homer and a walk. Maybe shouldn't have been given another batter. Hinch also did not go to Cole, but went to Will Harris instead, and bye-bye, World Series. It's one thing to consider the health of a player in June, July, but in Game 7, for a player that was then afterwards wearing his agent's logo on a hat and speaking to the media simply as a former Astros player and not caring to comment on any of that? Yikes. What grade do you give A.J. Hinch's managerial decision-making in Game 7?
If what's-his-face doesn't give up an oppo homer on a good pitch, people might have thought he was kind of brilliant. They lost. He lost every home game. So at the absolute best, I could give him a C-. But if we're focused on Game 7, I'll give him a D+.
Ooh, all right. The Washington Nationals won their first World Series this year. The Astros did it in 2017, the Cubs in 16, the Royals in 15. The Giants won for the first time in San Francisco ever and in 56 years. And those were just some of the firsts in baseball. The Warriors won for the first time in 40 years. The Cavs won Cleveland their first title ever. Toronto got their first ever last year. The Eagles, Seahawks, Saints all won their first Super Bowls. And in the NHL, the Kings had a first, the Blackhawks for the first time in 49 years, and the last two Cup champions, the Capitals and the Blues, got their first titles. All in all, 13 different teams won their first championship or won a title in close to 50 years, all in the same decade. It's simply incredible. What grade do you give the 2010s decade in terms of title winners?
Oh my God. As somebody who was around for late 60s, then all 70s, 80s, 90s, and 2000s, it was one of the best ever. It's a 10.
Grade.
Oh, A. Plus.
Fair enough.
Plus.
Now, I'm not in on all of the details or any of the context behind the fight that happened last night between Carl Anthony Towns and Joel Embiid, but it was one of the closest things to an actual fight we've seen in a long time in the NBA. There were actual attempts at throwing punches, a solid bit of wrestling between a pair of guys that are 7 feet tall and weigh 250 or more pounds. And from what I've been able to read and hear about on Twitter, this has something to do with Jimmy Butler for some reason. I don't know. What I am sure about is that Ben Simmons is less afraid of taking on the big cat than he is of shooting a three-pointer by putting the 23-year-old Towns in a chokehold on the bottom of the pile. And I say that Towns is only 23 because I feel like he's been in the NBA for a decade. It's just his fifth season. The Carl Anthony Towns and Embiid fight is a big little or no deal.
You know what? If you asked me about this tomorrow, I would say no deal, But because it's still in the last 24 hours, it has to run its course. Actually, by the time the first person hands out candy, trick or treat tonight on the West Coast, it's a no deal. So for now, it's still a little.
A medium deal. Coming next Tuesday, just in time for the biggest game of the year so far, the college football playoff rankings. They're going to be debating between LSU and Bama as the number one team in the country before one of them play in a, hopefully, elimination game on the 9th. And by the way, perfect scheduling for Oregon to have their second bye of the season that week. Tua Tagovailoa is questionable to play after suffering another ankle injury and a procedure that was done on that ankle. Bama did just fine without him, beating Arkansas 48-7. And according to Nick Saban, happy birthday, Tua will return to practice next week, but may or may not play in this extremely pivotal game for Bama. What percent chance do you give Tua Tagovailoa playing against LSU?
75%.
You were ready with that one.
I was thinking about this earlier today.
Fair enough. I'm done.
Is that it?
That's it. That's it.
I'm a great believer that, and Bill Parcells talked about this constantly when he was the Giants coach. You can play hurt. You should never play injured. If they feel, and remember, having this whole week off with the type of injury, doctors have been saying, they feel he should be able to play. It could also be a matter of they alter the offense because he really is a spectacular pocket passer. So, I would give him a 75% chance of playing. And, of course, we could learn within the next 48 hours that he suffered some kind of a setback and might not play again the rest of the year. So who the hell knows? But the question is asked on the Thursday edition of the Lightning Round. So I can only answer within that somewhat narrowed window. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. You know, somebody asked if we'd mentioned yesterday, for the first time ever, the University of Oregon women were preseason number one in the AP poll. And I'll tell you what, the thing that strikes you is they got 25 of the 28 first place votes. Stanford is third. Baylor is second. Then you got Maryland. UConn, whose program has just come untethered, is all the way down at 5. How about Oregon State at 7? UCLA 11. Four of the top 11 teams in the country. And it is the preseason poll. But somebody mentioned the ESPN poll, Freudian slip. The ESPN scroll mentioned the AP poll, and it said Ionescu and the Ducks number one, and you don't see that. When they announced Michigan State was number one, it didn't say their star player and the Spartans. And it goes to show kind of what Kelly Graves said a few weeks ago. She might be the most prominent player in college basketball, men and women. And it's emphatic about how nationally recognized she is. And sure, she's the ultimate team player and winner. And it's not her or the program's doing. It's just unique. All right, break time. Hang tight, coming up in the 4 o'clock hour. We got many things, which will include a chat with Aaron Fentress and Talking Trash, 95.3 The Score.
What are we talking about, Sip?